Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Well, good evening and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now talk radio show sponsored by NASCA. It is Monday evening, January 18th, 2021. It is also a holiday today. Let's take a moment and recognize Martin Luther King Jr. My name is Penelope Bennett. I'm a proud member of NASCA. I'm from Bellevue, Washington. And on my host team with me this evening is Pamela Lockridge from Louisiana, who is also an ambassador for NASCA. Tonight is special guest night. And we have a very special guest this evening. Her name is Nicole Mooring. She's from Hinckley, Ohio. And I will talk a little bit more about Nicole in a few minutes and read you a little bit from the bio that she provided us with. But before I do that, I'm going to talk about NASCA. Because NASCA, which stands for the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse, it is all about child abuse, trauma prevention, intervention, and recovery. I'm going to read you NASCA's mission statement now. We have a single purpose at NASCA: to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas and neglect, and we do so with only two goals, the first being educating the public, especially as related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic, worldwide problem that affects everyone. And the second goal, offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse, and information for anyone interested in many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. If you're streaming a show right now, but intrigued about calling in and being on the panel, I would encourage you to do so. Pamela Lockridge will welcome you to the call, and you can decide if you want to ask our special guest, Nicole, a question this evening, or if you prefer to listen in. The number to call in is area code 646-595-2118. Again, that's area code 646-595-2118. So before I introduce our very special guest this evening, I want to talk about the show and how we structure it. It's a 90-minute show, although the 90 minutes actually goes by very, very quickly. And we try and break the show into three increments. I'll introduce our guest, and she'll have an opportunity to tell us about her experience and she'll speak for about 15 minutes, and then we will break the panel, and the panel members who have opted to ask our special guest Nicole a question will have an opportunity to ask her a question and have interaction with her. We will then, again, allow Nicole to continue on with her story. We go chronologically. We'll have another break to the panel, and we'll try and do it a third time. As usual, I know many of us who call in have are adult survivors of child abuse, and we all have our own stories and experiences. And I thank you for being here this evening to support our special guests, and I would ask you to please keep your comments and questions around Nicole and her story this evening. So before I bring Nicole on, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about our special guest, Nicole Mooring, from Hinckley, Ohio. Nicole's daughter and son, and her son, is autistic. They were both victims of sexual abuse and assault. Nicole, as a mother, suffering through this unbelievable nightmare, she witnessed the difference in the justice system of how her daughter was believed and treated so well, and her son was not. Nicole quickly began to realize how difficult the road to justice is for an individual with a disability. Nicole was made to feel as if what happened to her son did not matter. So I'm going to leave the information about Nicole there. She's provided us a lot more information, but I don't want to tell too much. And now I'm going to unmute co-host Tamla's microphone. And Nicole, I'm unmuting your microphone. And I wish to welcome you, Nicole, to the show. Thank you so much for coming back. I know you were with us a year ago. So thank you for
being
here.
Thank you for having me.
It is our pleasure. And I wanted to. Sorry, go on ahead, Pamela. This is Pamela, my co-host.
Yeah, I just wanted to tell her thank you for coming on the show, Nicole.
Absolutely. My pleasure. I appreciate being a guest again.
Okay.
And I know we start, you know, the history chronologically. And so, you know, I'm going to turn the microphone and the show over to you, Nicole. This is your show and your special night. And perhaps just to fill us in a little bit about, you know, your children from their, you know, their early age, and just give us a background and a snapshot of their life and what their life was like, if you don't mind.
Sure. So I adopted both of my kids, my daughter at birth, and my son was 5 weeks old. And I, without getting into a lot of background, because unfortunately we don't have a lot of time, but I knew almost immediately that even though my son was placed as a neurotypical child, my gut told me something was wrong. And about 14 months later, my gut instinct was correct, and he was diagnosed with Fragile X syndrome and eventually with autism. And Fragile X syndrome, just for a brief overview, is a lot of similarities to autism. It's a cognitive genetic disorder. And at first, I was given the most grim outlook that he would never walk, never talk. So obviously, you know, as, you know, having this young child and given that outlook, you know, it was extremely horrifying. And I was up against, you know, this huge challenge having this, you know, young infant, and I decided I was not going to let that deter me, and I did everything possible to not have that, you know, be the case. And fortunately, it wasn't. You know, everything was delayed significantly, but I'm happy to say he's come a long way since those days. But fast forward, you know, as you know, he's growing older, my daughter's growing older. My daughter is older, and she's neurotypical. You know, going through the years, I had always told both of them, you know, about stranger danger, thinking it was more stranger related, you know, sexual abuse, unbeknownst to me that it's typically not. And I'd always, you know, talked about nobody could touch you where a bathing suit goes. And one night, never expecting, I honestly thought, since my son had special needs, to be honest, I thought he was exempt. I figured we would never have to worry about anything. I figured, you know, nothing was going to ever happen to him. And I didn't realize what the statistics were and how horrifying they were. And one night, it was actually 5 years ago on January 14th, he disclosed to me that he was sexually abused by someone we knew and trusted. And, you know, my heart sank in that moment. And I didn't know what to do. I mean, all I had prepared myself for at that point was to tell them that nobody could touch them inappropriately. And if they were touched or felt, you know, like something wasn't right, to come and tell me. But past that, I didn't know what to do. So here I'm, you know, standing in this moment of just horror. You know, it's one of a mother's worst nightmares. And, you know, all I could do was say, thank you for telling me, you know, you're so brave, and try and reassure him while I wasn't reassured myself that, you know, I was going to keep him safe. But I didn't know what to do because I wasn't educated. I didn't know anything past that moment, but I knew I had to protect him. I believed him. I knew it was true. I believed him. And so it's like, what do you do? Where do you turn? And so I began the process. At that point, my daughter had been seeing a psychologist. Their dad and I are divorced and had been divorced for some time since that point. And she had been seeing a psychologist because of that. And I called her because I didn't know who else to turn to. And unbeknownst to me, she was a mandate reporter. We're in the state of Ohio, and I don't know if it differs from state to state, but in Ohio, psychologists are a mandate reporter, and she was, you know, required to call and report the abuse. And that's how the cycle started to, you know, to go. And we started with, you know, going to the Child Advocacy Center after the social worker came to our house and, you know, talked to us. And he, you know, my son had a forensic interview and a forensic medical. And because he has cognitive delays, and, you know, he's at this point, well, now he's 15, but at that point he would have been about 10 or 11 when he first disclosed. And because of the delays and because of the way forensic interviewing is conducted, kids with special needs don't necessarily answer the questions in the way that is needed to be able to go forth with prosecution. And so when a child is asked, do they know the difference between a truth and a lie, you know, they don't know how to answer that question. So when my son was asked that question, his answer, you know, was no, he didn't. And so with that statement, with that answer, the case was unsubstantiated. So, but I knew, I knew, my gut still knew he was telling the truth, and I knew I had to somehow fight to get justice. But because of the case being unsubstantiated, he was still allowed to see this individual, and I was custodial parent, and he was permitted to go, and my hands were tied. I could have been held in contempt if I didn't let, you know, my son go with this individual. So, you know, fast forward, he continues on, and, you know, there's a lot to the story. I'm just trying to make this, you know, brief because of our time constraint. But about a year and a half later, he started having these tremendous outbursts that would last anywhere from maybe 10 minutes, maybe 15 minutes to a few hours. These tantrums that were unlike anything I had ever seen. And it wasn't, you know, your typical, my child's not getting their way because they're not getting a cookie kind of a tantrum. I mean, he was definitely distraught over something, but we couldn't figure out what that something was. So I began, you know, my quest in trying to figure out what this was, and I began logging, you know, on an Excel spreadsheet, you know, was there an antecedent, you know, was it certain clothing, was it a food, was it an environment, was it a person, just trying to figure out what was this trigger, you know, when these episodes would happen. took, you know, he was seeing psychology at this point. He was seeing psychiatry. The psychiatrist we had at that specific time just wanted to keep medicating him. I'm like, no, I that's not what I want. You know, I don't want to mask the problem. I want to identify it. I want to help him. And we just weren't getting answers. And I had him in intense applied behavior analysis, ABA therapy. That wasn't working. And it wasn't going to work because we didn't have a specific behavior we were dealing with. You know, this was, you know, trauma. This was PTSD, which we didn't realize. We didn't know. So probably about 9 months later, my daughter was the victim of sexual assault. And when she disclosed, she was 15 at the time, and she fought for justice. She fought for what she felt this boy should receive. She was 15, he was 19, and she really stood strong in her convictions. I was extremely proud of her, and it was at that point in time I realized that the justice system definitely favored children that are typical versus not, you know, with special needs. And, you know, they really cared about what she wanted, how she felt, what she had been through, what she had hoped would be the outcome. And eventually, with all the court proceedings, et cetera, he did receive jail time. He's on the registry for 15 years. She received justice. And so it was during this time, we're going through this court case and all these legal proceedings, and my son discloses for the second time that the same perpetrator, that he had taken pictures of him, naked pictures, and that they were put on the internet, they were put on the computer. And this was just beyond, the nightmare just continued. And
Sorry to interrupt you, Nicole. So when you said the same perpetrator, was it the same perpetrator as your daughter, or was it the same perpetrator that he had initially reported to you?
My daughter and son's perpetrators were different perpetrators. My son's perpetrator in both cases were the same. I'm sorry, I should have clarified that.
No, that's okay. And I don't want to cut you short. You can finish. I think in the next couple of minutes it would probably be a good time to take a break, but I didn't want to interrupt you mid-sentence.
Oh, no, you're fine. So, you know, he discloses this again, and, you know, I called the social worker and I reported it, and I said, you know, this is unacceptable, come on, you know. So we start the whole process again. This time it's substantiated. However, in Ohio, they sent out a letter to the alleged perpetrator indicating what the allegation, or indicating that they're named an alleged perpetrator. And when the individual receives the letter, they're allowed to call and to ask what the allegations are, to which he did, the perpetrator did. And it was at that time then he had hired a criminal attorney, which unbeknownst to us, we had no idea. And so now we have a 7-month gap here from the time all this is happening. And for 7 months, I fought for a search warrant because I figured that was necessary. I mean, that was the way we were going to be able to, you know, get the evidence we needed to convict him. And so it took 7 months, which I thought was completely unacceptable, to which by the time they actually got the search warrant 7 months later and did the warrant, there was no information to be found. Imagine that. So, So that was in 2019, and the prosecutor managed to take it all the way to the Attorney General's office to have it heard by the Attorney General's office, and there was nothing they could do. They did not have enough evidence to prove beyond a reasonable doubt. So,
it's just tragic.
Mm-hmm.
I can imagine.
Yeah. So it's extremely gut-wrenching to know mm-hmm. how the justice system works, and that it is so slow because they don't believe children like my son. And I know we're not the only case. I mean, there's many, many cases I've heard from people that have contacted me. It's sickening, truly sickening.
You know, and I really had never, thought about, that, children with learning disabilities and just them as a population, right? And this is very educational, not only for me, but I know for everybody out there who's listening, those of us who also want to be more aware. I actually teach at a college level, but I teach children with learning disabilities, so this is very helpful for me. As well, just to have information out there, just an awareness that I did not have before. I actually, it's a good time now, if you're okay with that, to break. And we have some panel members who've been with us since the beginning of the show. We have Sherry Alsup. She's our Kansas ambassador. And also Darlene from Tennessee, who I believe, if I remember correctly, she lives in Tennessee, but she's our Alabama ambassador, but I know that when she comes on, she will correct me if I am mistaken. So I'd like to, and I do have Pamela on with me, but because Sherry and Darlene have been on and listening for so long, I'd like to bring on Sherry first. And Sherry, you are on with Nicole. Welcome this evening,
Nicole.
Sherry.
Hi. I'm fascinated listening to your story. Our system is broken, as you well know. And I think the more of us that tell our story, the better we are. And it's really hard. So thank you for sharing.
Thank you. I agree. The system is extremely broken, and the awareness needs to be created. You know, I had no idea prior to, walking this journey, how broken it is. But it's not only broken, I mean, it's just such a misfortune of how differently and how discriminated individuals with disabilities are. It's just heart-wrenching, just to have seen how my son was treated and how my daughter was seen. It was night and day, and that just, we have to change that. It's unacceptable.
You are right.
Thank you, Sherry. And I know as we go further into the show, we'll have more opportunities for you to interact with Nicole. So, Sherry, we do appreciate you being here this evening. And I'm going to now bring on Darlene from Tennessee. Darlene, good evening.
Hello.
You're on with Nicole.
Hello, Nicole. I think you're very brave. I know it's aggravating, and a lot of us that have been abused wished our parents would have been like you.
Oh, thank you.
You're quite welcome. So kudos to you. And it is a broken system because a lot of times, a lot of people think that once you report it, that that's all it is. You report it and it's going to be fixed. The system is so broken, it's unreal.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Kudos to you. Thank you so much for sticking up for your children. I know it sounds kind of corny for me to say that, but a lot of us didn't have that.
No. I hope my story can help others and encourage others. I know it's not easy. It's been extremely difficult, especially to have to go through this three times because you never think it's going to happen once. And when I hear people say, they didn't believe their kids, and, everybody has a reason for things, but I can't understand that. I'm not here to judge anyone by any means, but I just, kids are so vulnerable as it is, and kids of special needs even more so, and they need our voices. They need us to fight, and it's, I'll tell you what, it's a hell of a fight. I'm sorry, but it is, but you have to do it, and it's all those, people that just want to give up and you just can't give up. You just have to keep going. And because that's what they want. They want people to give up and just say, forget it, and throw in the towel. And we can't do that because then the perpetrators win, and then they're out there able to, you know, do this again.
Yes, that's very true. And they looked at me like I was, you know, even when I was being abused after my divorce, and I had a boyfriend there, and the cops came, and the cops actually told him, said, if you go ahead and say that she pushed you to get out of the house, we'll arrest her, not you. Yet he had cut full of hair and all this, you know, that was on the floor and everything, and broken ashtray and everything. But if he would have lied, I would have went to jail, and he would have been free. But he was trying to get, I was babysitting a little 3-year-old kid, and he was ticked off at me because the parents were late. They didn't get there by 7 o'clock. So he was mad at me because I refused to put the kid outside and lock the door. So that's what ticked him off.
Yeah.
But kudos to you for doing all this, and special needs, it's even that much harder, even for one to come to you and tell you, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It's very brave of your kids telling you.
Yeah,
so
very proud of him.
So you must be a good mom too for them to feel trusted and have to come to you and tell you that. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, your story's going to be helping others, I'm sure of that.
Thank you. I appreciate your kind words.
Well, just being honest here.
Thank you, Darlene. Thank you. And I'm going to invite, you know, Pamela, my co-host this evening. Pamela, I'm sure you have a couple questions or comments for Nicole.
Sure. Nicole, you're just a mama bear. And I can't even imagine what I would do if I'd have found out my kids would have been molested. I know one thing, they did have a pedophile at the high school where my daughter was playing basketball. It was actually her basketball coach. And I went on every single trip everywhere with her on that bus. That guy could not stand me. But he was playing around with another student, so she was pretty protected. You know, it was a little town and they just tolerate it. Now I look back and see that a lot of them are pedophiles there. You know, you can have a whole town full of them, you know? I was wondering about, did you ever go through the Disabilities Act? Because, I mean, a disabled child has a lot of backing in the law as far as just the Disability Acts, I would say.
Oh, I have been down every road, trust me. we have definitely, there's been no stone unturned. It's just unfortunately how certain laws are written, which I'm now in the process of going through a lot of the laws. And the other thing that's unfortunate is, which I didn't know either before any of this, is that every state has its own laws. So not every state has, you know, a law doesn't necessarily carry over and have, you know, the same principles. And that has to change too. There were so many laws that would, you know, prohibit certain things. Which ultimately led to, you know, no conviction. And when you have these lengths, gaps in time for things because they're dragging their feet, or, you know, departments weren't communicating, you know, and I felt like I was the liaison more often than not, that shouldn't be me. I mean, I spent, you know, countless hours and, you know, sleepless nights, you know, trying to put things together. And, you know, there's people that just don't want to invest that kind of time. And I respect that. I understand that. But I was, you know, obviously fighting for, you know, for the justice for my son that he deserves. And he still deserves. But, you know, I'm really looking into laws now to see what needs to change. So, you know, convictions can happen, and, you know, we can put these guys away, you know, or women too. I mean, women, you know, do it as well. Because this can't happen. I mean, these kids need protection. And if things don't change systematically, then, you know, nothing's going to ever change. It's going to stay the same. And we just can't have that. So
let me clarify. There was nothing in the Disabilities Anywhere Act that addressed this situation with abused children that are special needs.
No, not for. Mm-mm. No, because the law.
Well, you better get cracking, lady.
I'm trying. Trust me. I'm trying. I've been working with some of our legislators and some legislators on Capitol Hill, you know, trying to change things. And it's a long process. I mean, laws, I'm sure, as you know, it's a grueling process, and there's a lot of, you know, legwork and formalities. And I am working on something which is a lot of components to it, but something that I hope to have called Evan's Law one day for my son. My son's Evan. And I would like to have it in all 50 states, you know, but it's just something that unfortunately doesn't happen overnight, and it needs to.
Have you thought about getting with Erin Marin and talking to her about maybe, you know, reaching out to some of the people that she reached out to get her law passed? It's now in 30 states. Of course, getting it implemented is one thing, you know, just because it's ratified, it still has to be implemented, you know?
Right.
But
I would love to talk to her. I would love to talk to her. I have not, but I would love to.
Yeah, I'm sure she'll talk to you. Just reach out to her. She's on Facebook, Erin Marin. But the other thing I was going to ask you is, have you started, well, you probably have, you know that each state is sovereign, right? It's like their own little country.
Right.
And that's why they have different rules. But the Disabilities Act, I think, is federal. So
it is.
You know, so if you can get it changed, you know, on the federal level, then it'll have to be. I mean, in other words, if they put some dollars into this, which is really what you're advocating for, dollars to go towards this justice, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if they have the money to give to the states, then the states are going to abide by it to get the money, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Money talks. So, you know,
sure.
You have to get to the people that in the federal government that have the money to give to the states for this, you know, because they're just going to say, we don't have money for this. You know,
right.
But if it's specified and allocated, they have to use it for that, or they can go to prison. You know,
exactly.
Yeah. So, you know, just I think it looks like later on we'll talk about your grassroots effort of what you're doing to help this. Okay. Thank you, Penelope, for asking to come on and talk. Thank you, Nicole,
absolutely.
For sharing.
Thank
you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Pamela. And, you know, Nicole, I mean, I'm just listening just to your whole story. I feel like I'm just hanging on every word. I'm just so angry for you. I just, as a mother, my blood is boiling at the injustice for both of your kids, but just the injustice of it all. And, first of all, I guess I just want to echo Darlene's comments and the comments of our other panel members. But, you know, when you were saying that you'd got, you know, your daughter was seeing a psychologist, and then, you took your son in initially, you know, immediately, I thought, what a good mom. What a great mom that you have your kids back. And they obviously know that because, as Darlene said, I mean, they trusted you. I mean, they came to you without a second thought. Just such a good mom, and you just came to be a good mom. And just, I just want to say, I think you're just a hero.
I'm so angry. I'm so angry at what happened, you know, to both of your kids. But to me, when I heard you say, when your son initially reported, you know, the first instance, and he was questioned and he was asked, you know, do you know the difference between truth and a lie? You know, based upon that answer, whoever felt that he lacked some credibility, you know, we know better. That's what makes me so angry. We know better than that, especially with a child with a learning disability. We know to ask so many different questions to peel back that onion. We don't leave it at a question or two and walk away from it. So that just makes me so angry, too, because we know better. And it's just really unfortunate that even though we know better, that there weren't so many other levels of questions to get to the root and the truth of what he was saying, you know, that he was just dismissed based upon his
exactly.
answer. So, I mean, I really applaud what you're doing, and I know it seems like you're just climbing a big, tall mountain, but I know you, and I can see, you know, in your bio too, but you've made some big strides up that mountain. But to me, I guess the other thing that really resonated with me was, excuse me, I almost feel like your son's, he's vulnerable. And I sense, you know, I feel, you know, as an adult survivor of child abuse and sexual assault, there was just something more vulnerable about me. And sometimes I wonder, was that vulnerability palpable? And to me, you know, if the perpetrator can sense vulnerability, to me it's almost, there's so many different crimes there, right, to prey upon a more vulnerable population that's out there. So I just feel that, I mean, the focus, there should be a greater focus on getting to the truth with children with disabilities that report these events. And we know.
Absolutely.
Children, no matter who they are or how they present in this world, they do not lie about being sexually assaulted. You know, more often than not, they are too afraid to speak of the truth. And clearly your son's acting out, and that's the other thing that really resonated with me when he was having these triggers and he was becoming, you know, his behavior changed so much. That's just such a telltale sign, right? That there's something there. And so, you know, I'm standing with you. You're not alone. I know we're all standing with you, but I'm also learning so much. And, you know, you're just really helping me to understand and become more aware of this issue. And I really appreciate that. I do think you're very, very brave. And I know that in addition to our panel members, you know, the others that are listening in, we can have anywhere from 20, 30 to 2,000, you know, it depends on the night, I don't know, but we always have so many more listening in, are benefiting so much right now from everything that you're sharing with us. So I wish to thank you. And at this point, I just like to turn it back to you if you'd like to continue where you left off.
Sure. You know, and I want to say to your point, you know, you're talking about, you know, these kids, you know, and even adults with disabilities, you know, obviously I'm speaking to kids about kids because, you know, this was my experience, but certainly adults with disabilities obviously are just as vulnerable. But, you know, the more research I've done, you know, the reason why the perpetrators are targeting them is because they realize that more often than not, they're not going to be believed, which is just heart-wrenching, like when I think of that, because that's where it's got to change, you know. But when people aren't speaking up, and I understand, like, you know, this is a taboo subject regardless, you know, if you're talking about, you know, you or I, or if you're talking about somebody with disabilities, and that's got to change. You know, this is happening more and more. It's a global epidemic. It's not even a national epidemic. And we've allowed it to become an epidemic because we're not talking about it, because we're not creating that awareness. And, you know, unfortunately, it seems that unless it's someone's son or daughter or grandson or granddaughter or niece or nephew, they don't want to talk about it. And then all of a sudden, once it hits home, like a lot of things in our life, let's be honest, you know, then all of a sudden it becomes a reality. And, you know, then we want to, you know, get the ball rolling and start doing something about it. But we need more people to start realizing, because if we could start teaching prevention instead of, you know, being proactive instead of being reactive, those numbers are going to decrease. And then that, you know, epidemic is going to start to, you know, fall by the wayside, you know, and that's what we would all love to see for across the board, you know, for any child abuse. Because it shouldn't be happening. And it's just so, it makes me so sad when you think about, you know, especially with the pandemic now and all these kids that are in isolation and, you know, you think we're trying to do good and, you know, protect ourselves and everything. But then when you think of the other side of the coin with all these kids being at home, being with their perpetrators, you know, more often than not, it's a caregiver or a parent or a grandparent that's the perpetrator. And you don't think of those things. Lord knows I didn't. You know, like I said, I figured we were exempt from this. I thought, well, nobody's going to touch him. He has special needs. And boy, was I wrong. I mean, I never stopped for a second to think that he was, you know, more vulnerable and more susceptible to abuse, you know, and never did I think it would be somebody we knew. I mean, I was that naive. So,
no one gives you a book. No one gives you a book on what to expect. I mean, on any kid, right? Nobody gives you a book on what to expect. I mean, you're taught how to change a diaper and feed your kid a bottle, and then they send you off into the world. And, you know, how would you have known?
Right. Right. And you know, you think, I thought I was doing good by, okay, I'm giving you this speech because that's all I'm going to have to do. I'm never going to have to do anything past that. You know, I'm living in my little bubble, you know, and then bomb, you know, the bomb hits, and I was like, oh my gosh, you know. But, you know, so that's what, you know, my quest is now, is to change all that and really advocate for prevention and, you know, teaching prevention and helping people to become more comfortable talking about it. I mean, I know it's not an easy topic at all. I don't like to be talking about it, but there's too many kids that need us, that need our help. And it's amazing how many people have, you know, contacted me since I started, you know, talking and giving speeches and, you know, being guests on shows and stuff, that have, you know, contacted me, people I know that have said, you know, I'm a survivor or my child was, and it's just mind blowing. You know, you don't realize how many people this has affected. People don't want to, you know, talk about it because it's, well, I'm ashamed. There's nothing to be ashamed of. You know, it wasn't my fault this happened. You know, I know it wasn't. It wasn't my children's fault. I know my daughter blamed herself for my son for a long time. You know, she was there. She felt like she should have known what was happening in the next room. And said, please don't. Don't do that to yourself. You know, you're a kid. Be a kid. That's what you're supposed to be doing. You're not supposed to be, you know, being a parent, you know. You know, it's just teaching those things to people so they know it's okay to come out and tell people and talk about it. And, you know, there's been a lot of people that unfortunately have either, you know, distanced themselves from me, don't support what I'm doing, that I talk about it, and it hurts. But I know I'm doing what I need to do because I need to help others. I need to change others' lives. I need to create that awareness that's not out there. You know, I struggle with this. I mean, you know, I'm human. I have a lot of, you know, sleepless nights that I cry myself to sleep. You know, it's my kids. Both of them were hurt in ways that, you know, unthinkable ways. But at the end of the day, I sit here and I think to myself, this didn't fall into my lap three times for no reason. Like, this I have to do something about this. I have to do something with my experience and my kids' experience, and be able to go and make good out of this and help others and whatever that's going to look like. And, you know, I'm a survivor. I was married to their father for 12 years. We dated for 5 before that, and it was an extremely abusive relationship. And, you know, so I have had to deal with that as well. You know, getting out of that, it's been 12 years now, and, you know, trying to spread that awareness too of it's okay, you know, to get out, because we only get one shot at this life, and you deserve to be happy, and you deserve to live life how you want to live it. And it's not always easy. I mean, it took me a while to get a plan and an escape plan, really. But when I got to the point in the end where, you know, I had clothes in my trunk for, you know, and my car keys were hidden and my purse was in the trunk and, you know, clothes for me and the kids, it's no way to live your life. And, you know, so I think with all of my experiences, it's just to try and help others, because, you know, abuse, domestic abuse, and, you know, I was emotionally, mentally, verbally, psychologically abused. I mean, I'm still seeing a counselor, you know, and we've been divorced for 12 years, and because it affects you so, so much, it's so profound. And, you know, it's not a light switch that you just switch off and switch on and you're fine one day. It doesn't happen like that. You know, I can be triggered by things, and but I'm working at it every day. You know, it's a work in progress. But I also didn't take care of myself for many years because I had 2 kids. You know, they were my life. They are my life. And I knew I had to make sure they were safe and they were secure and they were, you know, getting everything they needed. And then all this happened, you know, in 2016, all this happened. And that's when I really had my aha moment, if you will. And like, you know what, if I'm no good to them, if I'm not taking care of myself and really getting to the root of my own emotional issues. So that was a long time coming, you know, that I hadn't dealt with the core of my hurt and my anger and my pain from all those years of what he had did to me. So, you know, there's a lot of this out there, and I just want to be able to help other people and to know, to let people know that it's okay to, you know, move forward and never look back. I've never looked back. The day that gavel went down, I've never looked back. No regrets. My only regret is not leaving sooner. But I can't change that. So I just, you know, move forward and, you know, I don't believe in mistakes. I believe everything happens for a reason. And I, you know, I'm the person I am today unfortunately, because of all these life experiences. Wouldn't want to go through them again, you know, but, I just want to be able to help other people with the unfortunate things I've had to go through.
Because, yes, and it becomes bigger than yourself, and that's what I'm hearing you saying as well. It becomes bigger than yourself and your children.
Definitely.
You've taken on bigger than yourself, and you are helping so many people to, be it bring awareness, which could help other parents intervene earlier or notice things earlier. And something that you said that was so profound, I thought, is really just in speaking up about your own, you know, situation in your marriage and about your children, you are helping. Just having that voice and being courageous enough and brave enough to really speak publicly and to be vulnerable and to, you know, speak your truth, it's helping others, like you had said, they're coming out of the woodwork, shed the shame. You know, and be able to have, you know, the encouragement, you know, by seeing you as a testament and the courage to also speak of, you know, what
their own children have experienced, instead of keeping it, you know, inside and hidden. Because I think, you know, that's the momentum that you're bringing to this cause. And I just think I think what you're doing is amazing. I was wondering if you could, can you believe it? Time flies, I'm telling you.
It does.
We're 30 minutes left, if you can believe it. But I don't know if you wanted, how would you feel about breaking to the panel again? We had another panel member join. Great. So I'm actually going to invite Sherry to come back on. And Sherry, you're back on with Nicole.
I'm back.
Hi.
Hi. I'm a long-term survivor of sexual abuse. My abuser was my father. And kudos to you, this is my inter-child speaking, for believing your children and fighting for them. The majority of us don't get that. We're not that blessed. We're not that lucky. And I know that it takes on a life of its own and that you kind of had to fade to the back and you put their needs in the forefront of your life. For them, I say thank you. For the majority of us that don't have anybody in our corner fighting for us, thank you. Thank you for giving the rest of us hope that there are good moms and good dads that are willing to fight for their kids.
Oh, thank you.
Absolutely. I echo Sherry's sentiments and very, very well spoken. Thank you, Sherry. And I'm going to invite Darlene to come back on, if I can get these microphones to work. Okay, Darlene, you are on with
yes.
Nicole again.
It's working, sorry. All right. I wanted to say that I was, even though I was sexually abused as a kid, trafficked and stuff, I really had it thinking that my kids that were boys, you know, could never be sexually abused, right? I was always told a boy cannot get sexually abused. So anyway, I had that learning when my son was messed with and kind of got me for a loop, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it happened to be my mother-in-law, and we happened to be living there. But my ex-husband threatened me, so I couldn't do nothing about it. But anyway, kudos to you. The cops wouldn't do nothing never before, you know, and help me out either. So I knew they wouldn't do nothing, you know.
That's a shame.
Yes, it is. And like the day before Thanksgiving, you know, even though I'm an adult, I was sexually assaulted. And I called the police this time. I finally did. You know, I got brave enough to do it. They said all they could charge him with was harassment. And I said, hold on a minute. I'm an ASCA ambassador, and I speak against these kind of things happening to women or anybody that's been abused, or sexually abused, or anything. I'll speak out against this kind of thing happening. You know, we've been hurt enough. I was going off on them. I said, one day you're going to hear from me again, you know. But you're very strong, and thank you for sharing your story and being there for your kids. Are they okay when they do? They have friends and stuff that come over and play, and that kind of helps them get out of the muck. But I know right now with COVID stuff, that's kind of difficult.
They've both been in therapy, and I'll tell you what, I am a huge advocate for mental health therapy after, you know, any kind of trauma. It's helped my son significantly. The changes, you know, we've seen in him, you know, obviously, you know, there'll always be triggers and whatnot because of the PTSD and stuff, but he has come such a long way. I'm so proud of him. But you know, we have an excellent therapist. It's not easy to find, you know, trauma trained therapists, especially for kids with special needs. But he has a phenomenal therapist and, you know, just really working with, I'm since remarried and, you know, he's working with, you know, my husband and I and my, you know, my daughter, and he works with the school. Just, we've had a really successful mental health component and also his healing process, which has just been instrumental.
Yes. That is awesome to find a therapist that believes him too, you know, and who he trusts.
Mm-hmm.
That
yeah,
is very
that's a key factor,
important.
Trust. Mm-hmm.
And you, and it kind of helps when you get on the floor and just play regular games with them too, you know, where they, the only player's not that role player in the doctor's office. We still get to play with mommy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get down on the floor still with my grandkids, and everybody says, "You're 58 year old." I said, "Don't be sitting on the floor. You might get stuck down there." I said, "I ain't dead yet." All right, well, I appreciate it. Kudos to you for being a strong mom. And thank you for coming on here, sharing the story. And now you're my NASCAR sister.
Thank you.
Thank you. Take care.
Thank you, Darlene. So, Nicole, we had another panelist join us. I have William from Alabama. And William, I just brought you on. Thank you for joining us this evening. You were on with Nicole.
Pardon, what did you say?
Thank you for joining us. And I actually unmuted your microphone, and you are on with Nicole if you'd like to pass along or ask her a question.
Hello, Nicole. Yeah, you touched on a lot of subjects there that is difficult with the way the system is sometimes with the different issues. But I'm glad you're working on that and advocate and stuff, doing good stuff like that. Is it that
Thanks.
Type of stuff needs to be done with the system.
I agree. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, William. And thank you for joining us this evening. And Pamela, I'm just going to shout out hello and give you another opportunity to interact with Nicole.
Yeah. I'm still here. I like what the other listeners are saying, Darlene, and Sherry and William. I'm going to ask you a hard question, Nicole, if that's okay.
Sure.
When you look back, because everything's 2020 hindsight, right?
Mm-hmm.
Say you look back and you knew what you knew now. How can you help others? Tell others something that they can do that might have prevented, or was there anything that you could have done different that could have prevented this from what you know now, not what you knew then, but what you knew now when you're looking at it?
So from what I know now, I mean, definitely the education for prevention, so you can be proactive instead of reactive, and learning the signs and the symptoms of abuse, making all those that are in direct contact with your child or ever alone with your child, making them aware that you're having conversations with your child so that they're on high alert, that, you know, you're definitely paying attention. You know, so to hopefully, you know, lessen any chances of anything happening, I definitely think those things would be things I would do now that I didn't know then.
Amazing. I mean, it's almost like you have to consider everybody one until you rule them out, you know? And that's
right.
Just a shame. That's a doggone shame in the society we live today. That we have to suspect everybody.
Yep, it sure is.
I mean, I wouldn't leave my children with anybody. If I had any children now, they would not sleep over with anybody. I don't care if they were president of the United States. You're not staying with anybody.
Well,
I'm serious. I don't care if the Secret Service. I don't care if the Secret Service is there.
Right.
You know? Because
but when you think
this is ridiculous. This society, our society is rotten, and it stinks, and it's imploding from within, from all this sexual immorality going on. And we need to speak out and say, until you can prove to me you're not a sexual predator, stay away from me and stay away from my children.
Right.
I'm mad.
Exactly.
I'm upset.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, and you know what I find upsetting? I'm just going to chime in here, Penelope. I was that kind of mother where I was so, well, I was labeled to be overly protective, right? if I wasn't 100% comfortable, and of course, you know, I grew up in extreme abuse and I was molested by my father at a very young age, right? You have this hyper intuitiveness, right? I call it my spidey sense. It's just, right? So you get some hinky feeling about anything, and I was so overly protective, but I felt like I was shamed for that, right? Society was, no one was on my side. I was, eyes were rolling. She's overly protective, right? But, you know, where's the balance, you know, to be overly cautious? I mean, you can't keep your kid in a bubble, but if you feel like if you're not comfortable, you know, don't we have right as parents to make those choices without having our, you know, eyes rolling behind our backs or in front of our, you know, for us to see in plain sight? I feel like there's not the support either in society for being the kind of mom that you are, the kind of parents that we've been to our kids, because we've walked in these shoes of abuse and we know the dangers.
Right.
Definitely. And I agree with you 100%. My kids have nicknamed me Helicopter Mom, so I and I'll take it. You know what? There's worse things. but you know, to your point, you know, I do think that there's a lot to be said about that. I think that there's, you know, a lot of people that don't understand, you know, unless you've walked down this path of abuse or other things. I mean, obviously we're talking about abuse tonight, but, you know, people don't understand the ramifications and what it does to a person. And it's not a short-term effect. It has long-term implications, and it's going to change your thought process. It's going to change your parenting. And, you know, I always try, you know, you try not to judge, you know, and you try and think and put yourself in other people's shoes, but, you know, people need to really be considerate and cognizant of, you know, how would it feel if, you know, you were in that situation or not, and how would you react or what would you do? You know what the answer is? We don't know. I couldn't have sat here and answered any of those questions if my life experiences didn't happen to me. You know, my life experiences have formed me into who I am. And I'm not going to apologize for that. I'm not going to apologize for being the overprotective mom that I am. And I do know that there's been comments made. And it used to bother me. And now I'm like, you know what? Go ahead. That's okay. You can parent your way and that's all right. And I'm going to parent my way. And you know, fortunately there's people out there that never have to deal with any of these things. And I wish I was one of those people, but I'm not. So I have to handle things how I see fit for my situation. And I just think society on the whole, you know, to your point, Penelope, is just, it's not supportive for so many things. I haven't felt supported by many people, and it's hurtful. It's hard. It's extremely hard. And it used to bother me, and I've gotten past it to some point. I mean, there's still time. You know, I'm human. But the people that I need to support me are supporting me, and that's all that matters. You know, my husband, my mom, my late stepdad, my kids, a couple of my very close friends. You know, that's who I need in my immediate bubble. And that's all that matters when I really sit down and think about it. So, you know, I have bigger fish to fry and bigger things to think about than perseverating on all those that aren't showing me support or, you know. So,
right. Pamela, have you ever thought of this as a civil rights issue? Have you ever looked at it through that lens, civil rights, for your child?
I haven't yet, but it's not off the table.
Okay, and the other thing, one more thing, was, you know, there was a movement that came about, and you might want to study that movement, and it may help your movement. And I'm going to tell you what that movement was. MAD.
Mm-hmm.
Mothers Against Drunk Driving.
Yeah.
How about Mothers Against Sexual Abuse of My Disabled Child?
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
I mean, we need to get out about it. We need to tell people we're not taking this anymore. And you're going to be put under jail, or you're going to lose your rights as a citizen. See, I'm about 2 semesters away from getting my master's in Homeland Security, and I have a master's in social work. And I want my thesis paper to be that if we can get Congress to change the laws and cause sexual predators that are convicted to be labeled enemy combatants of the homeland and sent to Guantanamo Bay and lose their citizenship and rights to be in America. That's the only way we're going to clean this up.
Wow.
I'm not
That's
playing.
Interesting.
I'm not kidding. I went to a book festival and brought my books, and Carl Rove was there signing books. And I asked him, could it be an executive order? And he said, no, it'd have to go through Congress. So anybody listening wants to get on the bandwagon with me, just call me, and I'm on the contact list in NASCA, Pamela Elaine Lockridge.
I want to be on her team during tug of war on things.
Me too. I want to be on your team.
You know, these are some, you know, really, really heavy topics, and I'm glad we're discussing them this evening. And I think, you know, there's obviously some really, you know, good ideas going around too. And that's, you know, that's pretty profound. That's very profound, Pamela. I mean, Mothers Against Drunk Driving. And they did, I mean, they did have a huge impact, and they were able to create a huge change agent, you know, for the way that we talk to our children about drinking and driving and just DUIs in general. And I guess on that note, and I'm curious, and I'm sure that you've heard of them, because I actually did the social worker credit training, Darkness to Light.
I had them come down to Natchitoches and I got a certificate in it. Yeah. That's a good organization.
Yeah, I got that certificate too. Even though I'm not a social worker, I wanted to do the one that was a little bit more in depth because I was very curious about the work that they did, and I thought it was a great course. I'm just wondering, Nicole, do they have they customized one maybe gearing towards children with learning disabilities, and maybe, you know, the verbiage and the talk track and the education around, you know, that population of children?
We are in the process right now of developing something like that. So not to my knowledge, there's nothing to what you're speaking of, because I am somewhat familiar of the Darkness to Light, but we are in the process of doing something similar. It's just we're at the beginning stages, so I don't have a lot of information yet, unfortunately.
Well, you know, let me say here,
let me say something here. This family again. My abuser got so scared at one point that he went in and was going to get a protective order against me because my sister was bugging him. And I had left it all alone, but my repressed memories were coming back. And he got so scared, he went in and tried to get a protective order against me. And while he was trying to get the protective order, he told on himself. He said he abused me because he knew criminal prescription had run out. But when he told the police, that opened up a civil suit for me because he caused me more injury. So I tell people, look, you know, they're weak, they're cowards. Let them know you're after them, you know, and then when they go try to protect themselves, they end up telling on themselves and they can get sued, you know. And it's not about them, of course, but, you know, even if somebody sexually abuses your child, you know, and they get off, you still want to contact the police and keep the police on their tail because they're going to go after somebody else. Your child isn't only child they're going to sue.
Right, exactly.
That's a good point. Nicole, can you believe that we have, oh my gosh, we're down to almost 17 minutes. We're at 18 minutes. And I really want to hear about Voices of Change 2018. So we're in the last segment of the show, and I wanted to give you an opportunity to tell us a little bit more about what you're doing now. I know I can read from what I've read, and I went on your Facebook page, you're doing some amazing work.
Well, thank you. So my daughter Macy and I, we started Voices of Change 2018 in 2018, and it was after – both, you know, she and my son had just closed. And honestly, we started as an Instagram page, you know, just wanting to spread awareness. And when we started to, you know, get a lot of messages and emails and, you know, direct messages, and we really started to realize, you know, the need for this. So that's when I started to look into, you know, becoming a 501c3, a nonprofit status. And so that's what we did. I began the paperwork for that through the state of Ohio, and we became a nonprofit in July of last year, July of 2020. And, or I'm sorry, July of 2019, I'm sorry. And we received our status in March of 2020. And so our vision is, you know, we help children and families with disabilities. Obviously, our big initiative is the prevention of education and really teaching that so we can help eradicate child abuse. But also the mental health component, as I was speaking to before, to help families and individuals to receive that mental health, to collaborate with mental health providers, and to, you know, make sure that there's monies being available if money is an issue. So, you know, doing fundraising and getting grants for that. You know, because we don't want anyone to ever go without that mental health piece, because that's crucial in the healing process. And, you know, I've had so many people tell me that, you know, they couldn't do it for financial reasons, or their insurance, you know, didn't allow for it. And, you know, we do have the Ohio Crime Victims Compensation, and I know other states have that as well, but, you know, that there's a cap on that. So that only goes so far. So we, you know, one of our initiatives is to help with that. And then to provide the support and the resources for families after, you know, if they've been victimized. I know in our case, for my son, you know, once we left the Child Advocacy Center, there were no resources available. You know, they just didn't have them. Whereas for my son, I mean, I'm sorry, for my daughter, you know, we were given a list. We were given a folder with, you know, various, you know, support groups and, you know, psychologists and psychiatrists, et cetera, you know, to be able to call and, you know, have her involved with. And for my son, there just wasn't that opportunity. So creating that and then working with child advocacy centers, And then as far as the education program, you know, teaching prevention through workshops for law enforcement, for parents, and for children. But how we're going to make it unique is teaching children on three different levels, so three different levels of cognition, so a mild, a moderate, and intense version, so that we're actually teaching so they're actually learning. Because if, you know, we can put out any kind of material, but if they're not going to comprehend, then we're wasting our time, we're wasting their time. So they have to actually, you know what we're training on and know what the signs are if somebody's touching them, and, you know, how to tell and who to tell. So, you know, to me, that's very important. You know, there's kids that are nonverbal. You have so many different variables. You know, the kids that, you know, are confined to a wheelchair. There's so many different things with kids with disabilities, and we have to make sure that we're reaching everyone. So you have to make sure that we're developing this program and it's unique to everyone so that we are targeting everyone. You know, so that's just really important, and just offering those supports to parents. You know, there was nothing for me. There was nothing for me and my husband as far as supports from the community, no support groups, anything like that. And that's another thing. You know, we had each other, but past that, there was nobody, you know. So unless somebody goes through this, you don't understand. I mean, my, you know, friends could say, well, you know, what do you need, you know, and everything. And I appreciated that. But, you know, you need that empathetic person that can really have that relatable experience, you know, that you could really talk to. So creating those support groups and those contact people, so that's what Voices of Change is, and we're working with a few individuals right now to partner with them and to put all this into motion. So we're hoping soon, hopefully by the end of the year, we'll have some things into place. And just, you know, spreading the awareness. You know, right now it's just really, while we're working on all this and putting all this into play, you know, spreading the awareness and growing the awareness and growing Voices of Change, so people know we're out there. There's not a lot of organizations out there that advocate for kids with disabilities that have been abused or just for abuse in general. So we're really trying to create a very unique program, you know, kind of all in one to encompass every possible need that a family or a child could need. So that's a little bit about us and what we're doing and, you know, our goals for, you know, the near future.
That is incredible. I mean, to me, you have built what you did not have. You have built
you
have built what you did not have.
Right.
Which is incredible. And I'm sorry, Pamela, I did not mean to cut you off.
Oh, no, I was just listening, and I see here that she's you work in a healthcare environment, you've got corporate experience. Those two things are going to help you with your process, I'm sure, with your company.
It has.
Right.
It has, and then it really has. There's a lot to learn, though. I didn't realize. But you know what? Every day I'm learning something, and it's been an incredible journey. You know, and we're getting there. So we're very excited.
Well,
you know, I really want to offer, like, you know, what Penelope said. You know, I want to have the services available and the resources available that unfortunately we didn't have. And that's where the vision came from. When, you know, my daughter Macy and I sat down and really started brainstorming on, you know, what would this look like, and, you know, what does society need, and, you know, what can we, you know, put together as a program, a successful program, to offer services to others, because, you know, unfortunately there's so many
well
kiddos and families.
Well, yeah, what I was, you know, as a social worker and things like that, I come up with some ideas and know that, you know, there's so many programs out there, and you want your program to be one that is, you know, when it comes to evaluation, you could even get some grants if it's, you know, because you have to do a needs assessment first. And it sounds like to me you've researched and done your needs assessment. But the model has already been done. The Children's Advocacy Center model is excellent, don't you think, in all 50 states? And all you would have to do is take that model and tweak it for disabled children, you know?
Well, and the thing of it is we're not going to be a child advocacy center, since, you know, that would just be reinventing the wheel. And we wouldn't, to try and get federal funding for that would probably be, I don't want to say impossible, but probably next to impossible. So, I mean, that's why we're creating our model in such a different fashion. So we won't be doing forensic interviews or forensic medicals, those things. I mean, everyone will still go through a CAC. So we'll work closely with the CACs, with the advocacy centers. But yeah, because we had put a lot of thought into that too, of creating a CAC for special needs kids, but it didn't make sense to do it that way and to structure it that way.
Oh, okay. Good. It's good you've already looked at it and seen what, you know, take parts of what works for them and then what's going to work with you and your organization and kind of combine it maybe or work with them.
Mm-hmm.
And seems like, you know, you could get some corporations involved. I mean, I'm sure some of these corporate heads or corporate people would have children with disabilities and they'd want their children protected. You could go to them and say, look, this is what we're doing, you know. Is there any help we can get, you know? And not just monetary, but, you know, suggestions.
That would be wonderful. We're definitely looking for grants and funding right now, so we would appreciate anything.
Right.
Well, you know what, Nicole? Believe it or not, I know you're. I feel like I'm always a time lady when I'm doing these shows, but you know, we have to keep our eye on the time, and we are down to a little less than 7 minutes. And I would like our panel members just to have one more brief opportunity to speak with you. So I'm going to now bring on Sherry. And Sherry, if my microphone will turn on, you are back on with Nicole.
Okay. Thank you, Nicole, for everything that you're doing. Best of luck in your endeavors, and I hope that all the doors that you need swing open wide for you. And mostly, I hope that your children are growing and happy and healthy.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you, Sherry. It's nice to hear your voice again. Thank you, Sherry, and thank you for joining us this evening. I'm going to put you back on mute, and I'm going to bring Darlene from Tennessee back on. Darlene, hopefully I see your microphone's on. I just want to give you one last opportunity to speak with Nicole.
Hi, Nicole. Thank you so much for everything that you're doing. You are an inspiration to many, and I'm proud to call you sister now. But thank you so much. And there are a lot of people that's pulling, and we hope that in some ways we might be able to help you since we're ambassadors too, you know. I just want to say thank you, and don't forget that a number of people can call for a child in trouble, 1-800, the number 4, and then a child. I just wanted to bring that up too. That's 24/7.
Important.
Thank you.
Important for me. Thank you, Darlene. Thank you, Darlene. Thank you for calling in this evening. It's good to hear your voice, Darlene. I'm going to bring on William from Alabama. William, you're back on with Nicole.
Hi, Nicole. Yeah, you've been doing a good job, and I'm really I'm glad to hear the advocacy and stuff that you're doing. So But that's like Darlene said too. You're doing a good job, and I just want to kind of repeat what she said, and don't be a stranger.
No, definitely not. And please check out we're on social media. We're on Facebook and Instagram, Voices of Change 2018. And we have a website too. It's voicesofchange2018.org. So please, we would love to have you follow us. And my email's on there. If anyone wants to reach out, I'm happy to, talk to anyone or answer questions.
Yeah, I kind of follow that stuff because being a legal assistant and stuff like that, and so I'm watching the court systems a lot with this stuff and the law
that
changes
would be great.
And things. Yeah.
That would be great. I'd love it. We'd appreciate it.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm glad you're doing a good job, and like Jeanette said, don't be a stranger. Dolly.
Definitely not. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, William. It's nice to have you on the panel this evening. Thank you so much. And so, for those of you listening in, it is voicesofchange2018.com, if I'm correct. There's a website.
.org. Yes.
Voicesofchange2018.org. You're on Facebook. In fact, under the NASA website, under the schedule of shows under tonight's date is the bio that Nicole had so graciously provided us with. And you can actually click on her name and it will take you to her Facebook page for Voices of Change 2018. So you can also find this information on the NASA website under the current show schedule for 2021 under tonight's date. So just to let you know, Nicole, it's there as well. And I did have one last question. We just have a couple of minutes left, but I wanted to know, I know you were on the show, on the NASCA show a year ago, but how did you find NASCA and at what point did you find NASCA?
I believe it was on Facebook, actually. And then I think Bill had reached out to me or something. Maybe I follow the group or something like that. So I think that's how the connection was made originally.
Wonderful. And for those of you listening, NASCA's website is www.nasca, which is NASCA.org. And under the NASCA Facebook page, we are also a 501c3 nonprofit organization fully supported by its members. Whether you are on the first day thinking about coming forward and starting the healing journey, or, you're an adult survivor of child abuse looking for a support network, it doesn't matter if you've been in therapy or how long you've been in the process of recovery, you are welcome to go on the Facebook page, join the group, find our website, www.nasca.org. You are in any of the Facebook groups, public or private, on Instagram. You are a member of the NASCA family. So feel free to check NASCA out. Again, it's www.nasca.org. And I wish to thank Nicole for coming on this evening and sharing her story with us. So appreciated. So this has been the NASCA Stop Child Abuse Now Talk Radio Show for Monday, January 18th, 2021. Pamela Lockridge and I wish to thank Nicole for coming on and for our panel members and for all of you streaming in. Thank you and good night.
And good night.
Another tomorrow, 'cause that's gone.